The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of its hosts, guests, or callers, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of WTBR-FM, its management, other producers, or sponsors.
Well, good morning, and welcome to the Morning Drive here on WTBR. It is Monday, February 9th, day after the Super Bowl. So we'll talk a little bit about that. Commiserate maybe a little bit about that after the weather. So in studio today, we have Representative Tricia Farley Bouvier, representing the 2nd District here in Pittsfield for Massachusetts, down at the State House. And I am Brian Burkle. I am your guest host today. As always, we are live and local this morning at the WTBR studio on Federico Drive. And before we get into many topics that I'm sure the representative has to share with us, as well as the Super Bowl, we are just going to check in with the National Weather Service to see what is in store for us.
WTBR radar weather for the Pittsfield area. Cold weather advisory in effect until 10 a.m. EST this morning. Today, sunny. Not as cold with highs around 18. Northwest wind 10 to 15 miles per hour with gusts up to 25 miles per hour. Wind chill values as low as 26 below this morning. Tonight, mostly cloudy in the evening, then becoming partly cloudy. Not as cold with lows around 6 above. Northwest wind 5 to 10 miles per hour. Wind chill values as low as 1 below. Weather forecasts for WTBR-FM are provided by the National Weather Service.
All right. So, as I usually say after this, sounds like winter. It is going to be an absolutely beautiful day if you like sunshine. If you like warmth, not so much. But it is February. So February 9th, like I said, the day after the Super Bowl. So in studio, we have Representative Tricia Farley Bouvier. Good morning.
Good morning. I hope you're doing well this morning. You're up and out early, and doesn't matter if it's cold, apparently, to you.
No, likewise, you're here too, so kudos back to you. So did you catch the game last night?
I did.
Yeah.
It was a little painful.
Yeah.
But,
it is.
You know,
hey, next year, right?
Next year.
As we always say.
I was just listening on the way in, you know, that this team had the opportunity to be there. I don't think it's the last time that this group is going to make it there, and to have this experience under their belt.
Yeah, exactly.
Will give them, just have them be stronger the next time around.
Yeah, it is a younger team, and you know, kudos to I mean, you know, here's the thing about the Patriots, right? So this was Super Bowl 60. The New England Patriots have appeared in 12, which is 20% of all Super Bowls have had the Patriots in there.
Yeah.
Win or lose.
Right.
You know, they've had them in there. So a little story relative to this.
Mm-hmm.
When I, in the early 90s, they worked out in Boston.
Okay.
At the Ritz-Carlton Hotel.
Okay.
And the original one on Newbury and Arlington Street.
Okay.
And that morning I was going into work, and they were all over the radio. There was just all this talk about a press conference being held at the Ritz-Carlton that morning. And it was sports related because all the sports writers were invited. And it was such a secret, there was just a lot of rumors. And the biggest rumor was that Kirby Puckett was coming to the Red Sox. That was the one that they were all sort of circling around. Wasn't the case. But so I get to work, and I'm told, go up to the mini ballroom and don't let anybody in until 9 o'clock. So there's a press conference up there. So I go up there. I go inside, and there's two people in there. And I said, are you guys here for the press conference?
Mm-hmm.
And the man says, yeah, it's my press conference. And he introduces himself. I'm Bob Kraft. This is my wife, Myrna. And I said, so what is this about? What's going on? He goes, oh, well, we're buying the New England Patriots.
Oh, my goodness. And what a moment.
I know. So I said, you know, and of course, and at the time, the Patriots were just terrible, right? So I was being polite, and I was like, okay, hey, you know, congratulations. That's really fantastic. But in my head, I'm thinking, why are you blowing your money? You know, and then obviously foot and mouth, even though I didn't say it out loud, foot and mouth metaphorically, I was really wrong on that one, because I mean, he has made quite a dynasty, you know. So
Wow, that's quite a story, Brian.
Yeah, it was kind of a neat little moment.
Yeah.
In retrospect. In the moment, I was kind of like, okay, good luck, buddy.
Yeah.
You know. But, yeah, so, and of course, there's always this talk about the day after Super Bowl being a holiday. Have you heard this buzz?
No.
Oh, yeah. There's a movement about afoot to make it a holiday the day after. But, you know, they're moving the Super Bowl back a week. Because I think they're adding another week of game play. So it pushes the Super Bowl back. So essentially that's happening because, you know, the President's Day is often going to fall afterwards, right?
Interesting. Wouldn't it have to be 2 weeks if that were to happen?
So if this is the 8th, what's today's date? 9th, right?
Yeah.
So President's Day is next Monday, isn't that right?
Oh, I see. You're pushing it this way.
Yeah,
oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah. And of course, the other conundrum there is that it's going to be on Valentine's Day. So that could be a challenge for some folks. But so anyway, thanks for being in here today.
Sure. This is always a great show. I think it reaches a lot of listeners.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's my goal to be as accessible to the people of Pittsfield as possible. And this is a really great way to do that. So I appreciate your time here today.
Well, I appreciate you coming in, especially so early. So what is going on down east? I assume that we're getting close to budget season. Is that right?
Yeah. So just a quick review of how this all works. The governor puts out her budget at the end of January. And when it is, so there's 2 years in a legislative session,
mm-hmm.
when she puts her budget out in the first year of the legislation session, we call it H1 or House 1. And when it's the second year of a legislative session, which is right now,
mm-hmm.
we call it House 2. So her budget is called House 2. When people hear that, they'll know that's what they mean.
So House 2 means the second year of the...
It means it's the bill number.
Okay.
And they just reserve 1 and 2 for the governor's budgets.
Got it.
Okay. And... So that goes out the end of January, and then there's lots of talk, and the legislature goes to work. Now, sometimes we like to say, in a little bit of a teasing way, that the governor puts out a suggestion for a budget, and, you know, because it's the legislature who decides the budget. That's mm-hmm. just how it works, right?
Right.
And so the House takes up the budget officially the third week of April.
Okay.
So we have April vacation, right? Mm-hmm. And then immediately following April vacation week, we do our budget.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a ton of work that goes into that. And then the Senate does it all over again in May.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the month of June, 3 members from the House and 3 members of the Senate get together. And that's called the conference committee. And they come up with a reconciled budget. Now, what often happens over that period of time is more information comes in. For example, like a thing everybody watches is how the revenues are doing.
Mm-hmm.
So we announce revenue every month, and usually there's some indication of how that's doing every 2 weeks. And so sometimes things have to change, you know, over that time.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the thing that people need to know about in Pittsfield the most... And it's not good news at all, Brian. So just, it's worse than the Patriots' loss.
Okay.
Okay? I would just want to have people understand
putting things in perspective.
Right. Right. And that is that our Chapter 70 money, when that's the money for K-12 education, so for the Pittsfield Public Schools,
mm-hmm.
is lower than expected, is the best way to put it. And I would say it's lower than expected by about $5.5 million.
Okay.
And it's very serious. I thought it might be helpful to try to explain why.
Yeah, please.
Would that be okay?
Yeah.
So we are now in the 7th year of a 7-year rollout of a bill that was passed back in 2019 called the Student Opportunity Act. And during the 7-year rollout, there's significant funds for Pittsfield, because Pittsfield was considered a city of need, right? Mm-hmm. Community of need, more money for Chapter 70. So where we used to get, somewhere between another $600,000 to $1 million a year, each year, this time we were getting $3 million extra each year. That was the expectation, that we would get $3 million because of this pretty complicated formula. A big part of the cut. Still with me, Brian? This is not easy.
I'm doing the math.
Okay. So so over 7 years, we would have 20, instead of having $7 million more, we would have $21 million more. That's significant, right?
Right.
So then something happened around year three or four in this, and that instead of getting $3 million more, we got $6 million more. Why?
COVID?
No. We got poorer.
Okay.
Okay, are there more needs in Pittsfield than before?
All right, it's just a redistribution
right.
of
so
the funds that were already there.
Every school district is put into a group, group 1 through 12, and we had been in group 10. And that means you are between 65 and 70% of your students are of high need, English as a second language, low income, special ed, that type of thing. And around year three or four, we tipped over just barely into group 11. So that meant instead of $3 million more, we got $6 million more. Well, last year there was sort of, you know, we panicked a little bit because we went below 70%. And so last year, we got news that instead of getting $6 million, we got like $500,000, $600,000. It was only by two students. And so I did a significant amount of work, and I found an error in their counting and working with the Pittsfield Public Schools. And we were able to get a correction, and we went to group 11 again. We got our $6 million. I'm totally rounding all this off, right? And we were okay. But it was always precarious because we were just barely, barely over. And this year, indeed, we went back to group 10.
Okay.
So, and by more than, you know, 50, 60 students, we're not going to make this up.
Okay.
And so now we're still getting much more money than we did before the Student Opportunity Act. But the anticipation of being in group 11, which is what the city based their budget on, based the contracts on, collective bargaining agreements on, has not come to be. And, you know, this is bad news for the Pittsfield Public Schools.
Okay. And have you, is there some kind of a fallback plan, or is there something else, some other reserve?
I mean, I'm going to work as hard as I can, you know, to see if I can make this up. But I don't know how to make up that amount of money. I just don't know how to do that. And, you know, I'm saying this and it makes it, I'm sure I sound like I'm being super matter of fact and, you know, not upset. I'm really upset about it. It's just that I don't know how to fix it.
Yeah. No. I you know, the matter of fact, you know, you're it's very, you're going through the numbers.
Yeah,
you're going through the facts. You're going through the steps. So I understand. So thank you for explaining that.
Can I just clarify something?
Yeah, of course,
so people say, oh, it has to do with school choice. This actually has nothing to do with school choice.
Okay.
They count the students in Pittsfield, no matter where they go, to come up with these numbers. So this has nothing to do with school choice.
Okay. So that is not a factor.
That is not a factor in the fact that we are in group 11.
Okay.
That we are not in group 11, that we're in group 10. It has nothing to do with it.
All right. So again, if we are in group 11, that's where we want to be.
We get more funding.
Okay.
But there is an indication that Pittsfield's doing a little better. So that's,
yeah.
You know, but, you know.
Double-edged sword.
Right. But is it less people or less? One of the ways you decide what, how you count these things is, for example, how many students are in families that are on SNAP benefits. Are people not on SNAP benefits because they're afraid to be on SNAP benefits, because it's harder to be on SNAP benefits? It's things like that. You know, who's on MassHealth? Is it harder to be on MassHealth? So are these counts undercounted because things are more difficult to do these days? That could be. It's a little early to be conclusive about that. Those are just questions that I have.
Okay. And so when is the final decision on where we stand? When is the final designation of which group we're in?
So I would say now. It's okay. Really, once Chapter 70 money, once the Chapter 70 distribution comes out, mm-hmm. it almost never changes. The only thing that can change is that there's something called the minimum aid per student, mm-hmm. and that number can change. And we've never worried about that number because we were not a minimum aid district. We always got much, much more. Mm-hmm. And that number could change, and it could mean, you know, another $100,000, $200,000 or something, but nothing to make this up.
Okay. And what is the deficit you're projecting from last year?
Well, so it's not a deficit.
Okay.
It's very, that's yes. really, really important that it's not a deficit.
Right. Yeah, we are getting, make sure I'm using the right words
yeah,
here.
So but I understand what you're saying. It's, we are getting about $5.5 million less than anticipated.
Okay.
Okay, but we are getting, you know, between $400,000 and $800,000 more than last year. But, you know, just the collective bargaining agreement is about $4 million or so, is what I understand.
Okay.
So.
All right. And I assume these are conversations that you've had with the school department.
Sure.
And,
right away.
And the, yeah.
Right.
So they are aware of this.
Right. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And it's, you know, they've discussed it, you know, at public meetings, mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. for the school committee and such like that.
Yeah. Okay. So is there anything that we can do to prepare for this as a community?
Well, I would just, you know, be paying attention to what's happening with the school committee and, you know, support the school committee as they make, and the superintendent as they make some difficult decisions.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thank you. What else are we looking at here with the budget?
Any other projections? The budget, you know, we're trying to, something to keep in mind is that, you know, let's round things off a little bit in the billions, that like we're at about $62 billion budget, mm-hmm. right? And about $16 billion of that comes from the federal government through state dollars. And so as the federal government, you know, isn't really predictable these days, mm-hmm. about, you know, what's, you know, what funding is, and they're cutting off funds for this or for that, it has a really big impact on our budget.
Yeah, that sounds like almost 20%. Is that right?
Yes, 20, yeah.
Roughly, yeah.
And then there is, there are some of the state taxes that we pay that are, by definition of how we defined what you pay taxes on, are defined by federal, what you pay in federal taxes. And in what's apparently now called 3B, that big abomination bill that was passed, so many of those were changed and you don't have to pay those federal taxes anymore. And so that is that's going to impact state taxes. So that's, you know, revenues are down. That's just one example of how revenues are going to be impacted, mm-hmm. Either through funding or through how we collect state taxes.
Okay. So the 3B, that's the, mm-hmm. the big, beautiful bill, mm-hmm. right? So you're saying that there's something in there that has changed the amount of taxes that that the state can pull in as revenue?
Pulling in because of the way they're connected, the definition is connected to federal dollars.
Okay, got it. And so, you know, when there's such a large portion of the budget depends on what the feds are giving us, I would assume it's probably difficult to make some decisions too far out until you know what they are going to be appropriating, right?
Right. So there's some talk about should we uncouple those, you know, it's coupled mm-hmm. to the federal. So do we uncouple those mm-hmm. or not? And, you know, that's just, it's a pretty big decision about whether to do that or not because, you know, we're not looking to hurt. You know, we want to support our businesses. We want to, you know, it's an election year, right? Mm-hmm. Is it going to be interpreted as that we're raising taxes and people don't like to do that? Mm-hmm. And at the same time, we have to support people who need the support.
Right. So when you say uncoupling, Would that then essentially be like two different columns of budgeting?
Yeah, so, just the definition. Yeah. It's instead of like you pay this, if you pay this tax at the federal level, a certain percent of that you also pay to the state. That's mm-hmm. how it's coupled. And so we would say it differently.
Yeah. Now, you've talked before about the Fair Share Amendment.
Yeah.
How does that play in? Because I know it's a 4% tax on income over $1 million.
Yeah.
Right?
So each year, if you make over $1 million, mm-hmm. there's an additional 4% on the part above $1 million. So it's important that you know, Brian, that your first $1 million that you earned last year.
My first million?
Your first million that you earned last year. There is no change in the amount that you are taxed.
Okay. I'm safe on that.
You're safe on that. I'm safe on that. So those dollars have brought, that amendment, Fair Share Amendment, has brought in more than expected. Mm-hmm. So when we were advocating for this, the estimates that it would be $1.9 billion a year, the opponent said we were way overestimating that. It was more like a billion. And this past year, actually, it was closer to $3 billion.
Okay.
Now, we don't think it's going to stay at $3 billion. It's probably going to shake out at like $2.4 billion. But we anticipate it to be about there now. So that is making a really big difference. But remember, those dollars can only be spent on education and transportation.
Right. So therein, because it's earmarked for transportation and education, is there any part of that that can supplement this other matter that we're talking about?
So it already is.
Is that already
it
factored
already
in?
Is.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
It already is.
All right.
But now remember.
So I didn't just like.
No, you didn't just find money for us, Brian. Good job, though. Good try. So, but the Fair Share Amendment, you know, people should be really proud. There's a lot of work that was done to pass the Fair Share Amendment. Mm-hmm. Berkshire County in Western Massachusetts really carried that, you know, being able to pass that. Mm-hmm. And for example, universal school meals are paid for because we have the Fair Share Amendment. Free Community College is paid for because of Fair Share Amendment. And this year, at least this year, the Chapter 70 money, the Student Opportunity Act money, is partially funded through the Fair Share Amendment.
Okay.
Now, that's supposed to split 50-50 or thereabouts between transportation and education. We're looking at funding more early education is through the Student Opportunity Act.
Okay. So as far as you said that it does definitely cover the food, right?
For lunches, universal school meals.
Okay.
Yeah.
And is that in any way compromised, or is that one thing that is like a cornerstone to where that money goes?
So in the first or second year of universal school meals, there were federal dollars that mm-hmm. helped fund it. And then because of the Fair Share Amendment, the federal dollars, we weren't sure of the consistency of that. And so a decision was made that universal school meals were going to be paid for through the Student Opportunity Act.
All right.
And so that's stable.
All right. So that is secure.
And I would say it's a real priority of the legislature to make sure mm-hmm. that feeding children is, you know, first.
Okay, good. What else? What else is coming up? What are the considerations you have to make when it comes to this upcoming budget?
Well, there's just so many things, you know, like we're trying to do healthcare. Mm-hmm. You know, how do we make sure people, you know, healthcare dollars are in jeopardy right now through mm-hmm. the federal government. There's a lot of definitions and waivers and all these things that have to happen through the federal government. And so making sure people have what they need for their health care is another big challenge mm-hmm. That we'll do. Higher education, you know, we're working on. But it's not just the budget, right? There's we have some bond bills. So, you know, the annual budget is different than when we do bond bills, right? So bond bill is like, you know, your budget is your annual household budget, and a bond bill is like you're taking out a mortgage or a second mortgage because you're going to do some projects, right? So there's a bond bill now for higher education. capital costs. So at BCC, at MCLA, you know, we are looking at borrowing, you know, $1 billion designated for those construction costs.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that, and so those are different ways that we spend money, through bond bills or through mm-hmm. the annual budget.
All right. What else is going on?
Well, I'm, you know, chair of the Advanced Information Technology Committee.
Yeah, I heard.
And so there's a lot going on with that. Mm-hmm. And
could you explain what that is exactly?
Sure.
Advanced
Information Technology, the internet and cybersecurity. So mm-hmm. I work on things like data privacy, quite frankly, first and foremost right now, all the things around AI and cybersecurity. Mm-hmm. And then an interesting topic that is in front of us is the issue around PEG stations, or you know, community access television stations,
right,
which I happen to be sitting right here.
Yes.
There. So those are the things that we work on in committee. Mm-hmm. And so along with my own legislation, mm-hmm. right, I've been working with the committee staff, you know, a couple of young super smart kids, yeah, on coming up with policy around those things.
Right. What are some of the issues that you're looking at with AI and the data privacy?
Yeah. So comprehensive data privacy is what I say is the underpinning to any kind of technology legislation, mm-hmm. And that is, we should all be kind of freaked out about how much of our data is just being, you know, collected, bought and sold, and you know what is how it's shaping our lives.
Mm-hmm.
So, a principle of comprehensive data privacy is something we call data minimization, and that is having rules that say you can only collect what is reasonably and proportionate to the service I'm requesting.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
So, if I have a flashlight app on my phone, it is reasonable that I have that so I can light up the sidewalk on a dark, icy night or something like that, right? It's not an expectation that that is tracking my location and mm-hmm. then selling that.
Right.
And right now, because we don't have rules, they can do whatever they want.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, because there's certain things that are just basic utilities like that.
Right.
Right, or checking the weather.
Right.
Or certain things that are just meant for informational utility purposes.
That's right.
Right.
Or if you buy a game on mm-hmm. your, if you're just playing a game, I don't know, do you have games you play on your phone, Brian? A little bit.
Not much.
Just, okay.
You know, the Wordle.
Okay, right. So, but you don't download Wordle, and then why you have it is because you want to play the game. Maybe you're playing with other people. Showing off your great scores every day, but you don't have an expectation that it is tracking your location, that it, you know, has already, you know, it knows and sells the information that you prefer Dunkin' Donuts over Starbucks or mm-hmm. something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we don't know what's happening on these apps and on these games. We do know that they are collecting data that they have no right to have.
Right. And I know, you know, people have those conversations where they say, you know, geez, I had some company over when we were talking about something that I never speak about.
Yeah.
Elephant tusks, let's say.
Yeah. Yeah,
something. You never mentioned that, right? But we had that conversation over the kitchen table, and I have an Alexa in the house, and I have my cell phones, and then sure enough, over the next couple of days, I started seeing advertisements about safaris and going to the zoo of elephants.
Right.
And, you know, we think that, you know, these things listen to us.
Right.
And they say, oh, they're interested in elephants. Here's a whole bunch of elephant information. Right. And I actually saw something where it's actually even more complicated than that. That it's not just that somebody's recording you, because they'd made a point that, you know, even all this storage, video and audio recordings take up a lot of space.
Mm.
So it's not even financially feasible for these storage places to keep that per se. They may have heard it and then passed it along and erased it. But there's a bigger pattern here that they said is actually a little bit more concerning, in that it has to do with your algorithms and other people's algorithms. And so let's say Tricia, you had been on a safari,
mm-hmm.
right? And so now it knows that you are interested in animals and stuff like that. And then mm-hmm. you and I come together here in this room,
mm-hmm.
your algorithm interacts with my algorithm, and now it's it is now that stuff is showing up because you brought it in the room, and they end up crossing paths,
yeah.
right? And so it's not my algorithm is predicting that because I know you, I might now be interested in elephants. Right?
Isn't that awful?
It's amazing, but in a frightening kind of way,
yes.
right? So these are things that you are looking at as trying to put some controls on that.
Right, at least on the data privacy. Mm-hmm. So when it comes to algorithms, that's going to be a whole nother step, as you said, right? That's a different step. And that is, you know, what we know is these algorithms are by design addictive, mm-hmm. just as cigarettes were made by design to be addictive. These algorithms are by design to be addictive.
Right. All right. So we are at the top of the hour, 8 o'clock. We're already halfway through. It's just flying along, isn't it? So we are going to take a quick pause for station identification and thank some of our underwriters, and then we will return. You are listening to WTBR 89.7 and WSBR 88.1 out of Lee.
Stay tuned for more Morning Drive here on WTBR FM.
Pittsfield Community Radio, 89.7 WTBR FM Pittsfield, 88.1 WSBR Lee.
Support for WTBR comes from Berkshire Community College. Free community college for any Massachusetts resident without a bachelor's degree at BCC. Find out more at berkshirecc.edu. And from Sundrini Awnings and Home Improvement, providing awnings and canopies in Western Mass. Retractable awnings, retractable screens, gutter and gutter protection systems, commercial awnings and screen rooms, customized solutions available. Online at sondrini.com.
WTBR-FM is listener-supported radio. That means we depend on your donations to keep the station on the air. All the local content and the music you love requires your support. You can make your donation today at WTBRFM.com by calling 445-4234 or stopping by our studio at 4 Federico Drive in Pittsfield. You'd be glad you did. Pittsfield Community Radio, for the love of radio.
It feels like nobody can agree on anything anymore. But disagreements lead to compromise, and compromise leads to progress. And that's the way we accomplish important things in a democracy. Luckily, we have PCTV's coverage of our local meetings, and we can see for ourselves the issues that are in front of us. We can watch our elected officials decide how to solve problems, and that service must have support to survive. Because if there's one thing we can agree on, it's PCTV's reliable coverage. PCTV, support transparency.
Hi, my name is Al Perlman, and I love jazz. Mostly jazz from the bebop and beyond period of the 40s, 50s, and 60s. I also love sharing my passion for jazz from my extensive jazz vinyl collection with listeners here in Berkshire County. So please join me on Sundays at 8 p.m. for my show Jazz Collector Live on WTBR-FM Pittsfield Community Radio.
Support for WTBR comes from Greylock Federal Credit Union, proud to support high school arts and sports programs to help our community thrive. Greylock Federal, with locations throughout the Berkshires and online at greylock.org.
And from UCP of Western Massachusetts. UCP of Western Mass is hiring full and part-time opportunities to provide a life without limits for people with disabilities. For more information, ucpwma.org/jobs.
You have chosen wisely.
WTBR. And now back to the Morning Drive on WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
All right, good morning. Welcome back to the Morning Drive here on WTBR. I am Brian Burkle. I am your guest host today on this Monday, February 9th. And in studio, we have Representative Tricia Farley Bouvier, representing the 2nd District, which is Pittsfield, right? That is your jurisdiction. So from... Yeah, from north, south, east, and west. Before we get back into the conversation about what we can be expecting from the legislative end of things, especially down east, and how it reflects out here, we are going to check in with the weather and see what the national weather has for us.
WTBR radar weather for the Pittsfield area. Cold weather advisory in effect until 10 a.m. EST this morning. Today, sunny. Not as cold with highs around 18.
Northwest wind 10 to 15 miles per hour with gusts up to 25 miles per hour. Wind chill values as low as 26 below this morning. Tonight, mostly cloudy in the evening, then becoming partly cloudy. Not as cold with lows around 6 above. Northwest wind 5 to 10 miles per hour. Wind chill values as low as 1 below. Weather forecasts for WTBR-FM are provided by the National Weather Service.
All right. So again, that sounds like winter. Sounds like it's going to be a nice day today if you like the sunshine, as I said earlier, but if you like the warmth, just bundle up. Not the same today. So in studio today, we have Representative Tricia Farley Bouvier with the 2nd District, which is Pittsfield. And we were talking about your chair position on the Advanced Information Technology and Internet and Cyberspace Committee.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's a lot.
Yeah.
So we were just, let's pick up where we left off.
Yeah. So we were talking about the data privacy bill that I've been working on now for almost 3 years. It is a very big piece of legislation, an important piece of legislation that, you know, big data actually really, really doesn't want us to pass.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been kind of interesting to be kind of fighting against those big forces. But,
right.
And, you know, as I talked about before, you know, having your data collected and processed on things that you can reasonably expect and have it be proportionate to the services you want is like an underlying principle.
Mm-hmm.
But also within that, we have a list of things that we call sensitive data. And on sensitive data, you can collect things that are strictly necessary for what you are doing. So what would be sensitive data? Things like your gender, your, you know, any kind of personal information that you have on, like, you know, like your social security number, things like that. But also, like, you know, your gender identity, your sexual orientation, your pregnancy status, right? And really all health, biometric, wellness data. These are all things that are collected and then can be used to manipulate things. So
these are things that they could, we know about HIPAA, right?
Yeah.
But these are things that they can pick up on from your other habits and your purchases and things like that,
yeah,
that aren't, you know, individually covered by HIPAA, but they can interpret things.
Yeah. And
make,
you know, Brian,
right?
This is where, like, get ready for your mind to be blown a little bit. Very, very little of your health information is protected by HIPAA.
Mm-hmm.
Very little. So if the I in HIPAA isn't information, the I is insurance. And so if it's covered by insurance, strictly covered by insurance, then it is considered private. But for example, somebody who has a diagnosis of diabetes, and they use their insurance to get their insulin covered by HIPAA. But if you buy test strips, or, you know, somebody, sometimes people get glucose tablets or something, you just buy that at CVS. That is not, that's just open for everybody to know. You know, pregnancy status. You know, you bought a pregnancy test at CVS. That's, you know, that doesn't go through HIPAA. Women buy, you know, menstrual products, and you buy it in a certain pattern, and now you're not buying them in that same pattern, they're going to pick up that you're pregnant. And that's crazy. Doesn't that sound crazy? But it really happens.
And that goes back to that whole algorithm thing.
Right.
They're picking up on your behaviors.
Right.
And, yeah.
And I had this one lobbyist actually for, you know, a company who really was trying to say, oh, just, you know, not for us. And she goes, and I was explaining what my concerns was, and she said, so my husband and I, you know, learned that we were pregnant with our third child, and we hadn't told anybody. We decided we were going to wait a little while, and formula samples showed up on their front porch, and they hadn't told anybody, but the algorithms knew. That's pretty freaky. And then, of course, in the national atmosphere we have right now, pregnancy status can be a really dangerous thing.
Right.
And then precise location. That's really important to protect people's precise location. and location and precise location are actually different. So location would be Pittsfield, right? Precise location would be Federico Park, right? And so you can't buy or sell precise location. And you can imagine a stalker, you know, buying precise location. And quite frankly, right now, Immigration and Custom Enforcement is using these algorithms, including precise location, in locating people and tracking people, whether these people are immigrants or not, whether these people have criminal records or not, whether, you know, they have legal status here or not. And so protecting things like precise location and other sensitive data is really important work that we're doing. And we expect this bill to come to the House floor in the next, you know, 6 to 8 weeks.
Okay. And you know, with the sharing of locations, too, I mean, it's one of the things that, you know, we talk about with kids about not sharing with all their friends, right?
Yeah.
They can, you know, there's certain apps where they can share, like, where they are at every moment. And, you know, there's benefits to that, of course, if, you know, as a parent.
Right.
To know where your kids are, right?
Right.
And vice versa. But when the kids are sharing with, like, just this group of friends. And they don't even know who's necessarily even being invited into those groups.
Yeah.
And so we really, you know, at the kids' place, when we do some presentations about internet safety, that's one of the things that we talk to kids about, is just be really mindful. Like, why do you really need to have all your friends know exactly where you are at every moment? You know, they should be setting up some boundaries on that.
And the status as a minor is sensitive. In our bill, it is sensitive. And so, and we define a minor as under 18. That's something we're working really hard to hold the line on, so to speak, because there's a lot of pressure to not have the status of a minor as sensitive data. But we think for those protections and then for the algorithms and the targeted advertising that kids get, we are holding at 18 as the definition of a minor.
Yeah. And the thing with that is that, you know, a lot of these websites now, they do have age restrictions, right? Which is, you know, it's not real, right?
Right.
There's an easy way to get around those things. But you know, parents need to be mindful,
right?
When they allow their kids to sign up for a Facebook account or whatever, and they tell them, oh yeah, change your date of birth, you know, and they, you know, they figure it's harmless. You're just on Instagram, just on Facebook, whatever. But again, in that, that bigger universe of the internet, it recognizes that person as being a certain age because that's what you put in that one time.
Right.
And then, so even if they're 10, but they were put in as being 15. So when they're 15, it's going to consider them 20.
Right.
And it will have opened different gates that were in some way or another protected by age. Will have opened those doors along the way because it's assuming that this person is that age. So that's one of the traps.
Sorry to interrupt you.
No, go ahead.
So the bad guys, Brian, know that the kid is 15 lied.
Oh, sure.
And he's not really 20.
Of course.
And so now you have a kid who is vulnerable because they've already lied, right? And so when you're already lied, then you're keeping, one, you might be someone whose parent isn't keeping track closely enough, but also people, when they lie, can lie more to protect themselves against, you know, being found out from their lie. So, you know, these big data knows whether you put your birthday in or not, how old you are.
Right.
Right. If you're hanging out with other sixth graders, they know you're sixth grade. Right. If you, what you're buying, you know, what, you know, are you into Pokemon? Are you into Dungeon? Whatever you're doing, they know your age. And so to put a false birthday in doesn't do much.
Right. And on the flip side of that with the AI, I think it might have been Instagram. I'm not sure. I don't recall who it was. But one of the CEOs was talking about how they're utilizing AI to compartmentalize different material into like an age grading thing like movies, right? So if there's certain things, if there's blood or gore, it would go into you have to be 15 or above, whatever.
Right.
And so the algorithm would recognize images and words and sort it accordingly, supposedly. And they said that the flip side of that is that if there is a kid who is claiming to, you know, they know, well, they claim to be 16, so now they get into that category. They can open up the 16 age-appropriate materials that they claim that they're also using the algorithm to recognize, just like you said, that, okay, this 16-year-old is talking about all his fifth grade friends,
right?
And is into this or that. That's clearly a fifth grade type of thing. They're going over to their 10th grade, their friend's 10th birthday.
Yeah.
So the algorithm also goes outward, collects that information and identifies this person as 10 and will remove them from that category. Of course, we know they're using it for a lot more mining of information from them, but for what it's worth, that is at least a reasonable application of it.
And that, but, what I'm saying is they can do that.
Yes.
But we have no rules that say they must do that.
That's true.
And that's the thing that's missing right now.
Yeah. No, I agree. Okay. And that is part of the focus of this this act.
So the act is just on the data privacy.
Just on the data
privacy.
And
we need to, our next steps needs to be around like age-appropriate design. For, and that, what we mean by that is the algorithms. But until we do data privacy, it's hard to go further in regulating AI things.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's stuff around, for example, you know, we call them chatbots, but they're more like companion bots, right? And the harm that these companion bots are doing to everybody, by the way, who can get sucked into them. Doesn't matter how old you are, you really can be sucked into them. But to children in particular, it's really very, very scary what's happening out there.
Yeah. And just a little side on one story about those that I read about was that there's a children's toy, some sort of like a Teddy Ruxpin kind
type of thing,
right?
Yeah.
But far more advanced.
You're showing your age.
Yes.
our age that I recognize it.
where it does engage with the kids, you know, because it's connected to the internet. So it's using AI to answer questions about whatever the kids ask questions, right? To the point, though, where it's one of those just the facts kind of things, and doesn't have that further emotional intelligence and those barriers, right? So they did a test on it, and they actually asked this little bear about matches, like where can I find matches, you know? And the bear was like, oh, they're usually kept in a drawer next to the, and then gave the person instructions on how to set a fire. I mean, that's like, you know, child care 101, like don't let them play with matches, right? But this thing was just doing the facts.
Right.
It's like, oh, matches? Yeah, I know where those probably are. And here's what you need to start a fire. Instead of saying, hey, listen, go talk, you know, maybe you should check with your mom.
Right.
Right. Didn't have that guardrail in place, you know?
But. So there's a lot to do in the world of AI.
Yeah.
And not beyond the algorithms that we think of that is, you know, selling us shoes, like... Well beyond that, you know, these companion bots are really very scary.
Yeah.
And at the same time, AI is doing wondrous things, for example, in medicine, right? So
It's about balance.
I don't want to squash AI.
Yeah.
I just want to have the guardrails.
Yeah. It's balance and guardrails. Yeah. That's what it comes down to. So I'm glad that that's underway. So we also, you also said, you mentioned earlier about the Protect Act.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about that while we've got a little bit more time left.
This is a bill that has just been filed. And it's been filed by Representative Andy Vargas, who represents the city of Haverhill. Okay.
Yep.
And he is the chair of the Black and Latino Caucus. Why is this so important? A lot of people are very, very concerned about what's happening around immigration enforcement. And of course, what's been happening for the last now month or more in Minneapolis certainly has people's attention. It's really heightened our fears, right, and our concerns. And the Black and Latino Caucus has really responsibly and thoughtfully been working on legislation that what could we do as a state? Because this is the federal government, right? The federal government, you know, can make rules about what they do in our state, but what things can we do in our state? And so they have come up with several provisions that we do have control over within our state. And one of the things I really admire is that they have centered the experiences of immigrants and their families, the ones who are directly impacted by the policies and the actions of the federal government. as opposed to what I certainly fall into, and that is like my feelings on it, right? So, you know, I always say, Brian, I'm a well-intentioned white woman, you know, and I'm working hard to get to a point of being an ally, but I have to just face the fact that, like, okay, I have some good intentions, but I don't have the same experiences. And so, for example, I think the thing that upsets people the most are the masks, you know, that the federal officials are wearing masks, and we're not used to having law enforcement wear masks. We're used to our local police, nobody's masks, our state troopers, nobody's masks, people at the sheriff's department, nobody's masks. And quite frankly, we kind of know who everybody is. It's our own community. They're wearing badges with their names and maybe a badge number on it. And that's not what's happening with these federal officials. So what I want to do is go rip off their masks. That's what Tricia wants to do, right? But when you talk to immigrants, they go, that's not our biggest issue, right? I mean, yes, we're afraid of that, but we don't think it's going to actually work to try to fight about masks. So how about if you work on something that will make a difference to our families? And one of those is we have a facility in Plymouth where people are detained. And there's been work over many years of people saying, we don't want anybody detained. Massachusetts doesn't want to have anyone detained. Well, the immigrant families have said, well, we'd rather have them be in Massachusetts than hauled off to Louisiana or Texas or Florida or something like that. And so how about if you just stop fighting about Plymouth? But there's some rule, maybe some policies that we can make it better. For example, can lawyers should be able to call in at least once a day to be able to talk to their client. That's been difficulty getting that in. The person who's being detained should be able to, within 2 hours, make one call to say to family, friends, their lawyer, this is where I am, because so many people don't know where their loved one is. So there's rules around things like that that are in this PROTECT Act. And, you know, we're really excited to be able to support this, and we're hoping to get something to the floor of the House, like maybe within the next month, which is pretty exciting.
Yeah. And, you know, obviously, you know, you guys are working on legislature to protect people who are immigrants, illegal immigrants, technically, right? And so obviously there's the counter argument of, well, why do they get these protections? They're not citizens, right? But, you know, we go back to the 14th Amendment, right? Which came out of the Civil War. And that talks about, it's mostly about birthright, right? But but when you read the fine language and the debates that went back and forth, there's a lot more context to these things. And between that and there was a Refugee Act in 1980 that also set up some boundaries here. So that if anybody comes across into our borders, if they ask for asylum, we have to give them a hearing on it. Doesn't mean that they'll be accepted or that'll pass muster, but they're entitled to that hearing. But again, deep in some of that language was a phrase that I found. It was every citizen or subject of another country While domiciled here, living here, doesn't say how, but if they're here, living here, domiciled here, is within the allegiance protection and is subject to the jurisdiction of the U.S. Going back to Article 14, it says, you know, again, going back to subject to the jurisdiction thereof, are citizens of the U.S. and the state wherein they reside. So there it is. That's the blanket that says these people, whether they're here through the proper process or whatever, they're here. They're living here. So our Constitution says we have to take care of them and afford them the due process and those rights. And so that's what it comes down to.
Absolutely. Right? And we see a lot of places in the Constitution the word persons. Doesn't say citizens. It says persons. And so the Fourth Amendment, right? I mean, who'd have thought that we would be talking about the Fourth Amendment, right? Where people, you know, these officials are breaking down doors and going into people's house without a judicial warrant. I mean, that's stunning to me. I mean, it's really one of the core reasons the revolution happened was because the quartering of British soldiers in Boston,
mm-hmm.
right? And so the Fourth Amendment has always been like just really central to our liberties. And we just have to restore those things. Mm-hmm. And again, there's so much that we can't do because we aren't the federal government. It is Congress that needs to stand up to what's going on here to protect such things as the First Amendment. Now, of course, with, the murder of Alex Priddy, we're talking about the Second Amendment, right? Who'd have thought that we would be talking to fighting public administration with the Second Amendment? Nobody thought that would ever happen. The Fourth Amendment, the 14th Amendment.
Even the Third, which is the one about quartering.
Yeah.
That's one of those ones you look at and you're like, that
would never happen.
What is they even talking about, right?
Right.
But now, who knows?
Right? Yeah.
We need to be mindful of those protections.
And so we just have, what's happening at the federal level? We all have to continue to keep standing up. I really believe in peaceful, that's nonviolent, and quite frankly, Brian, whenever it can be joyful, let's have that happen. And really important in these times, unobstructive demonstrations of our First Amendment rights. We have to keep doing that, and we have to keep putting pressure on Congress. But in the meantime, what can we do here in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts? And this PROTECT Act, the provisions in the PROTECT Act, and I invite people to keep an eye out for that, how that is going through the legislature and the debate that we're having. I'm hoping that we're going to be having hearings within a week or two. And then at the same time, in parallel, the governor has announced both some executive orders, and she has filed legislation. And one of the things in this legislation, I think these things are going to come together into one piece of legislation, are things that are referred to as sensitive areas. So it used to be the practice, well established, nobody argued with it, that in certain areas like a school, a religious institution, a church, synagogue, a hospital, a courtroom, these places, ICE officials wouldn't go to. And that all of those norms have been completely broken at this time. And I'll tell you, the DAs in Massachusetts are having to drop one case after the other because witnesses and victims are not coming to court because they're too afraid. And so they're saying, no, I can't possibly come, or they just don't show up. And so what we're doing is we're putting, criminals back on the street because they can't close these cases.
Right. And, we see what's happening in Minnesota. It's happening in other places in the United States. And I think, when we talk to anybody here in Massachusetts, we are a blue state, we could be, there could be more focus from ICE at some point here, potentially, that it's important that people, it's an emotional topic, no doubt about it, right? But as those people who are the allies and trying to, stand up for people's rights, we also need to be careful, right? And understand that, don't impede.
That's right.
Right. Don't get yourself hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Don't get yourself arrested. Get yourself in trouble. You can videotape. You can do all that. That's your right. Be present. Report on it. But don't get yourself physically involved for your own benefit.
Right. Yeah, and so again, I'm just going to say over and over again. So what's happening with ICE? There are many people that are peacefully, unobstructively protesting,
correct,
and still are getting hurt by ICE because of the inappropriate way that ICE, I'll say criminal way that ICE is acting. And we still need to maintain nonviolent, unobstructive demonstrations of our First Amendment right.
Right. So, yes, so we need to.
Just want to be as clear as I can be about that, Brian.
Yeah. Yeah. So we want to make sure everybody's safe. So we have about 30 seconds left. What would you like to go out with?
Well, I just want people to know that, this is just a hometown girl. Mm-hmm. My job is to represent all the residents of Pittsfield in the state legislature. I want you to be able to contact me with any issues that you have. It's really easy to email me. My email is my name, Tricia. farley-bouvier at mahouse.gov. My office, my downtown office, is in the Frameworks building with downtown Pittsfield.
Right on Main Street.
You come there anytime.
North Street.
My legislative aide, Mira by Dyson, is out and about all the time. And so let me know. You can find me on Facebook. Messaging me on Facebook is not the greatest way to reach me, but call the office, email me. And, you know, see me about out and about town, and we want to be able to help as much as possible.
Right. Well, thank you, Tricia Farley-Bouvier. Thank you for being here today.
Absolutely. Thank you, Brian.
Thank you for joining us.
Be well.